All right, here we go. Hello, everybody, and welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. I am joined by the nephew and son of three different game show hosts, Mr. David Nars. How's it going, David?
It's going fine, Mike. How's it going where you're at?
I'm good. I hope things are going well in California where you're at.
Yes, Southern California is beautiful today. I'm sitting on my back patio, a nice little breeze about 75 degrees, suffering for the Lord.
Oh, yes. Boy, that's what I call suffering, absolutely. Anyways, yeah. So let's talk about game shows.
Okay.
There was a recent quiz show expo that happened. Did you get to go to that?
I did. I hung out with Adam Nedes.
Oh, Adam Nedes. Yeah, sure. He's the historian?
Yeah, he wrote a book on my Uncle Bill, so yeah, I hung out with him.
Okay. So I'm sure that you probably grew up around the game show sets of like Concentration and Video Village and things like that.
My earliest remembrance is moving to New York because my dad got Dotto at first. That was his first MC job. And we moved from Encino, California to Mamaroneck in New York, and he did Dotto there. And then when the game show scandals happened, we had already leased our house in California, so we were stuck in New York. So he was working actually for like Colgate Palmolive, who sponsored Dotto, and they found another show for him to do, Top Dollar, which kept us there another couple of years. And then finally we moved back to California after probably two and a half years in New York.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you talk about the quiz show scandals. Your dad wasn't aware of one game show because I think that the sponsors were like telling contestants the answers or something.
Well, what my dad didn't know what was going on, but apparently back in the days, and this is what my father assumed, game shows were a half-hour program, usually sponsored by someone in particular. My dad and Dotto was Colgate-Palmolive. Maybe somebody else with Chrysler Plymouth. Somebody else was Chevrolet. Somebody else was something else. So I think what happened is the producers kind of made game shows more pleasing to want to watch. So what they would do is kind of like a soap opera. They'd have writers come in and kind of, hey, this gal's really good looking, or this guy's looking really cool. How can we make them stay on the show longer? And what they were doing, apparently there were some answers to some of the puzzles. Dotto, as you know, is a connect the dot type thing.
Yes.
And somebody had slipped some names in one of the contestants' purses. So it was a female. And one of the guys, I guess, when they were in the green room, opened her purse and looked and saw it and reported. So Dotto was actually the first game show that got busted, from what I understand, but $64,000 question is the one that really got a lot of the hoopla because of the contestant and trying to keep one guy on and actually talking to both of them, saying, look, we're going to keep you on, you're going to get taken off, I think, or something like that. But my dad did go before the Senate, and he was found to be totally innocent of any charges. He knew nothing about it.
Yeah. So in your family, Dave, there's between all three of your relatives, they've hosted over 50 different game shows.
And yeah, it's insane.
I know. Can I just mention a few of the game shows that?
Sure.
I know I've already mentioned two of them, but you had two of your relatives that hosted The Price is Right. One of them was the original host. You had Body Language, which great game show, by the way.
Yeah.
I know that was Johnny Olsen's last game show before he passed away. And so another one was Beat the Clock, which your dad did. I know that they wanted your dad to host Beat the Clock, but Monty took the job instead.
No, what it was, so CBS was under contract with Monty Hall, and he didn't have any show. So they went to Goodson Todd and said, hey, can you resurrect Beat the Clock, because we need something for Monty to do, because we're paying him anyway.
Oh.
So Frank Wayne hired my dad to be one of the executive producers and the announcer. I actually worked on that show with my dad. I was on staff. I helped a guy named Mark Bowerman up in the stunt factory. We kind of created the stunts and took the writer's information, tried to create the the props that you would need, and then we would do, you know, show and tell and try to do a see if the tricks really worked and stuff like that. So I would, when the credits go by, it just says staff David Nars, but I was again not the stunt coordinator, but I worked with Mark Bowerman, who was a great guy, and he worked with Ted Cooper at Goodson Todman for a long, long time.
And that's who your all three of your relatives were hired under, was Mark Goodson and Bill Todman.
Well, they Dad worked for a couple others. So you did mention two of them worked at Price is Right. My dad actually guest hosted Price is Right when Bill went on vacation back in the days when Bill did it live. My dad, I think, did it for a month while my uncle went on vacation. And then, of course, Tom Kennedy, my dad's younger brother, whose real name is Jim Nars, did the nighttime version in the early 84, I think it was.
So how did the name Tom Kennedy come to be about? Did they just not want the confusion between?
Right. So my uncle did start out as Jim Nars. What happened was I think Uncle Jim, I think my dad might have been doing a show that was sponsored by Chevrolet. And Uncle Jim was then getting a show that was sponsored by Chrysler Plymouth. And there's a, you know, with Betty White and a bunch of other, the Cavalcade of Stars and the Plymouth Chrysler. And I think my dad and my uncle had the same agent at the time. And the confusion was Chevrolet, you know, here you got a Nars telling about how great Chevrolet is. And then you got another Nars over here saying, no, Chrysler Plymouth is the best. So as the story goes, and the short version is my uncle went into the Brown Derby, Jim Nars, and came out Tom Kennedy.
Oh.
And there was a lot of going back and forth with some names. I think, and again, at the time, as you know, John Kennedy or Jack Kennedy was becoming a very popular senator. And so Kennedy was getting thrown around, and they were thinking, how about like Kurt or Kip Kennedy? And they said, no, that sounds too movie starish. We want him to be more of a down to earth TV kind of guy. So they came up with Tom Kennedy.
I was talking to another Hollywood producer who's a friend of mine, and he's worked in game shows. And he said, who's the one of the best game show hosts that if they were still around today that you would hire them? And they said your uncle, Tom Kennedy, who was just a natural at everything that he ever did. Dr. IQ, great game show.
Yeah.
But so anyways, so you mentioned Beat the Clock, and I wanted to ask you, because you had worked on the stunts, worked on doing something, you said, right?
On the Monty Hall version, in 79 and 80, that version.
How hard was it to come up with all those stunts? Was it hard to come up with something different each and every time?
Oh, well, we had a bunch of writers. So I think there were three main writers, including Wayne's son, Phil, I think, who also worked on Price is Right. So the writers would come up with ideas. The biggest problem, and I think you might have, if you read the book that Adam did on Monty Hall, Monty Hall had grown up very poor, right? And so he had this infatuation with Beat the Clock. Whenever we had a stunt that included some kind of food, a bagel or a piece of bread or something, he would get so mad at the waste of food. Mm-hmm. And he was very, because of the way he grew up. Mm-hmm. And so he did not like that show. And when Adam actually interviewed me, I haven't read the book yet, but Adam interviewed me because I worked with Monty on Beat the Clock. And he asked what was it like. And I said, Monty hated that show. And my dad really wished he could have jumped into the saddle and did it again. My dad loved that show. He loved it he flew to Montreal, Canada on his own dime to record that show because Goodson Todman is on a strict budget. So a lot of their hosts had to pay their own travel. Like even, so my dad had to pay for his flights to go all the way to Montreal and fly back. And Match Game, Gene Rayburn flew to California to do Match Game from New York, and he had to pay his own airfare. So Mark Goodson was, and again, my impression of him is he's pretty tight, but you know, that's, we used to say about Mark Goodson, you know, pardon my French, when he farts, only the dogs hear him. And my dad used to tell a story about they were having a Christmas party, and Mark Goodson and Bill Todman, you know, sitting there, and Bill Todman had finished his first drink, which was probably just a beer, and he And he taps my dad on the shoulder and says, "Can you ask Mark if I can order another beer?" I mean, that's how tight he was on the budget. So,
wow. Yeah, that's one thing I also heard, that Mark Goodson, from what Randy West says, Mark Goodson had Napoleon's desk as well in his office. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but
I think I heard that from Randy, but I can't confirm or deny that.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. But so anyways, now let's talk about your uncle, Bill Cullen. Bill has hosted more game shows than anybody. And he is the one person who is host, as far as that is concerned, that never stopped working. He always seemed to have a job no matter where he went.
I would tend to agree with that. If not a job, a few jobs. I mean, he was – we used to talk when he would tell a story when we'd visit somebody. He talked about how he had 3 Tuesdays and 3 Wednesdays and 3 Thursdays and 3 Fridays. I said, how do you figure that? He goes, well, I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I do a radio show from 3 to 5. Then I go home and take a nap. Get up at 8 o'clock and run over and do another radio show. Then I go home and take a nap. Then I'd wake up and go do another show. So he would wake up and go to sleep 3 times on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays. And that's how it was in the early days of radio. And then when he got, you know, Price is Right and stuff like that, he was still doing radio shows. And all that stuff was alive. So it's not like you can... I mean, you had to wake up, and there were some stories of, you know, he'd get off at Price is Right and have to walk 20 minutes down the street to get in time for, you know, I've Got a Secret or something, some other show that he was a panelist on. He said, thank God I didn't have to study up on any of those panel shows. You just show up.
I also remember your Uncle Bill on To Tell the Truth.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that game show. I know that him and Gary Moore were already familiar with each other from I've Got a Secret.
Correct.
Just the chemistry between Bill and Gary was just incredible, since they already knew each other for, what, 50 years by that point, 40 years?
I have some videos and some handwritten letters. As you know, it's so weird now because I just turned 70 in February. My birthday is February 20th. My Uncle Bill was February 18th. Mm. And my Uncle Jim is February 26th.
Oh.
And my dad was in November. Of course, we're not all the same age.
Yeah.
But my uncle turned 70 in February and passed away in, you know, that July at 70. And what my aunt had done is she had written a lot of his past friends and stuff. Hey, you know, Bill's turned 70. It'd be really neat if you wrote a nice letter or something. So I've got all these letters that my aunt kept, you know, Steve Allen, Audrey Meadows,
oh, wow,
all the people, you know, Orson Dean, George Burns, all these beautiful letters saying happy birthday. And then all of a sudden, 2 months later, these same people are writing letters going, oh my God, I can't believe you got cancer. Mm. You know, hang in there, Bill, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Gary Moore has a 3-page handwritten letter. Just, I mean, you can hear in his writing, he's sobbing, just, mm, you know, the friendship they had, the kinship they had. They felt like, he felt like Bill could, you know, finish his sentences and he could finish Bill's sentences. And they were, whenever Gary would get stuck, Bill would jump in and help him get out, and the same thing. And you just read this. And then there's some home movies of him and Gary fishing on a boat, and probably in the Hudson River or something like that. And they're just drinking beers and smoking cigarettes and fishing off the, you know, and to see this stuff and read this stuff is just heart wrenching. And as you know, Gary Moore went through a couple of bouts of cancer as well and survived. So he was, you know, one of his letters was, you know, don't worry, Bill, you'll get through it. And then the next letter was, oh my gosh, Ann, I can't believe he's gone. You know, I miss him so much. And it's just heartbreaking.
You had mentioned that, and they used to give away cigarettes as a prize on I've Got a Cigarette.
Yeah.
And
Winston cigarettes.
Winston cigarettes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it's so funny. And I have a copy of it. So there was one where they had special talented people on that were relative to people. And the first guy's secret was Bill Marks, but nobody knew it was Bill Marks, but he was playing dad and had a little jazz quartet. And his secret was he's Harpo Marx's son.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, I think, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember, the Martha Ray's niece or daughter, maybe. And she came on and sang. And she obviously is like 14 or 15 years old. And it's like, hey, here's your carton of cigarettes. it's like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? You're giving this kid a carton of cigarettes? Yeah, I'm gonna give it to your mom or something like that. And they're all smoking like chimneys on the show. I mean, it's just insane.
Gary's holding a cigarette in one hand and doing
lighting another one.
Yeah.
One in the ashtray, one in his mouth, and one in his pocket getting ready to be lit. It's unbelievable.
There was one, I'm not sure if you've seen this clip or not, Dave, but there was this child that they had on there, and he just blurts out, so you're going to die from cancer. And then he told that to Gary Moore and I think to Henry Morgan, who cancer from smoking.
Yeah, that's insane. But I'll tell you, growing up in those days, I mean, there's commercials still that, well, again, because I have a lot of those shows on tape where, you know, doctors are saying, 9 out of 10 doctors agree that, you know, smoking Camel cigarettes, it's good for you. It's like, are you kidding me? ultimately, that's what killed my Uncle Bill. I mean, he smoked Chesterfield, Camel, anything without a filter on it. And you talk about a chimney, same thing. He'd go through 3 or 4 packs of cigarettes a day. When I worked, so I used to do camera blogging. Kay Henley, who did a lot of the celebrity, you know, bookings for Goodson Todman, also did the bookings for camera blocking. So I've been a member of SAG-AFTRA since 1977 because I had a short-lived radio career as well. So she would call us and we'd, you know, I worked on Body Language. I worked on Blockbusters. I worked on Nighttime Price is Right. I worked on Family Feud. I've worked on a lot of shows coming in. And when they set the stage up, they do pretend games with people that are in front of the cameras and they have to be SAG-AFTRA. So I would get called and be able to do that. And what I was trying to get to is on Blockbusters, I worked with them. In fact, I just talked to him, Bob Hamilton. I said, you know, we work together on Blockbuster. Oh, yeah, yeah. And we took a picture together at that expo and stuff like that. And he was talking about my uncle. But when my uncle would then come in to do a show, I'd always hang out and watch him tape some shows. During the commercials, I mean, he had a cigarette burning, you know, behind that little platform, you know, that he'd just turn around and take a couple of hits. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, the contestants on those shows must just be getting blown out by the amount of smoke. It wasn't like he had, you know, a spray mouthwash that you could do in those days. He was puffing away, just like crazy.
That's going to be my next question. Whenever you were around Bill, did he always smell like smoke?
Yeah. I mean, he smoked all the time. And so did my dad. So did my mom. I mean, everybody in the 50s and 60s smoked.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to somebody's house and there were cartons of cigarettes all over the house. There were cigarettes and cigarette boxes everywhere with matches right next to them. And ashtrays filled with cigarette butts because the first thing you do is get a cocktail and light a cigarette. I mean, that's what it was growing up in the 50s and 60s.
So speaking of Bill, it was your dad that introduced Bill to his wife.
So, yeah, there's many stories around. Now, understand my mom is still alive. She just turned 97 on July 3rd. So I think every story is correct, but everybody has their own version of it. So what had happened is after Place to Face, so Bill Cullen got hired to replace the two previous MCs on Place to Face, and my dad was always the announcer. Jack Smith was one of the MCs, and there was another Jack, some other Jack, that's why my dad on one of them. I don't think it was Jack Bailey, was Queen for a Day that my dad worked on, but.
Oh, okay.
But I think it was Jack Smith who did a show I remember when I grew up, You Asked For or something like that. But my dad had to change his name to Johnny Nars because he couldn't go by Jack Nars and have Jack Smith and Jack Nars.
Mm.
So anyway, Bill Cullen eventually gets the job to MC Place to Face, and he's flying in from New York. And my dad kept saying, hey, you know, if you want to stay over, you know, you can stay over. But my uncle, my dad really loved flying. My dad was a hump pilot in World War II. He flew over the Himalayas taking supplies into China from India. And Bill was a pilot. He had his pilot license and had a few little airplanes at one time and tried to start a little airline. And he flew. And I've got his pilot license here in one of my boxes of stuff. But, so anyway, regardless, my uncle, my dad would keep saying, hey, you know, come by the house. And one night my uncle finally convinced him to come by the house. They all went out to dinner somewhere. I think my mom said it was Mort Green, who was, I think, a lawyer of some kind. It was Milt Hoffman and Jan Hoffman. Milt Hoffman produced The Tonight Show with Steve Allen, did Arsenio Hall show, a bunch of other stuff. So he's a producer, lived down the street from us when we lived in Encino. So they're all out to dinner, and they all go, they come to our house on White Oak. This is on Encino, right off of White Oak, in the now the Ventura Freeway, but it's all apartments now, it's gone. So they're all sitting there, and either Mort or Milt ask my mom and says, hey, where's your father? You know, have Heinz come over. So if you don't know the story about that, Ann, which her real name is Elise Ann Romheld, and my mom was Mary Lou Romheld, and their father is Heinz Romheld, who was a composer and wrote motion picture themes and stuff in the 50s and 30s and 40s. And actually won the Academy Award in 1942 for scoring Yankee Doodle Dandy with James Cagney. Mm. So anyway, he's a very gifted piano player. And somebody says, hey, call up Heinz, have him come over to the house and play piano. We always had a piano in our house. So my mom says, well, I know exactly where he is. And this was on a Saturday night. You know, it's getting late. But she knows that Anne, her sister, went to USC and my mom went to UCLA. And Heinz and my aunt Ann would go to the football games on Saturday night. And what they do is there's a place called the Wild Turkey on Ventura Boulevard in the San Fernando Valley. And they would go there and a bus would take everybody to USC. They'd watch the football game and then they'd all come back to the Wild Goose and they'd sit around and have a very, very, very late dinner and cocktails. So my mom calls the Wild Goose and says, hey, is my dad there? Yeah, he's right here. So he gets on the phone and says, hey, come over to the house. All these people are here and they want to hear you play piano. So he comes with my aunt to the house. My mom and Bill are sitting on the couch. And of course, my dad's there too. So again, did my dad introduce him or did my mom introduce him? It's hard to say. But regardless, my mom and my aunt and my grandfather walk through the front door. And Bill leans over to my mom and says, what's that beautiful young lady doing with that old man? And my mom says, well, that old man is my father and that young lady is my sister. And she said the sparkle in his eyes just were unbelievable. Now, understand, Bill is still married to his second wife, Carol Adams, I think, or something like that. They're going through a divorce or whatever. And my aunt has just divorced her first husband. So they get to know each other. They start talking. My grandfather says, hey, I'm cutting out. You're going to have to find your own way home. You know, my grandmother and grandfather had split apart and Ann was living with my grandmother. So Bill says, well, I'll drive you home. So Bill normally would stay at the,
Beverly Hilton Hotel.
Yeah, Beverly Hilton Hotel. He had a suite there. So whenever he flew in, he had a suite there. I've got his old card for that too. And so he said he'd drive Ann home. So he did that night. They were up all night, I guess, and finally drove her home. And she said, would you like to come in for coffee? And he said, sure. And they actually sat down in the kitchen and made a pot of coffee and they were talking and talking and talking. And my grandmother was upstairs and who is that down there? You know? And my aunt said, oh, it's Bill Cullen. Oh, she goes, okay. And after a couple more hours, I guess my grandmother yells down, how many Bill Cullens are down there? Cause I mean, the conversation went on and on and on. So finally, that's when their courtship began. Every time that my uncle would fly in, he would start taking my aunt out to dinner. So they dated for about a year. He got his divorce from his second wife. My aunt, you know, was already divorced and still living with my grandmother. And so I think they met in 54 because I was born in 54 in February and they met in October of 54 and they were married Christmas Eve of 55. So they courted for about a year and a month.
I also wanted to say, Bill, I think, was the first guy to have a crew cut on TV because if you watch All Got a Secret, his hair changes many different times throughout the years.
Yep, and that stuck with him for a long, long time. And then when he finally moved to California, he said, screw the crew cut, and he started letting Sarah grow out.
I think.
And it's so funny. Well, the first time I saw Drew Carey on his show, I said, this guy's trying to look like my uncle. I mean, the black horn rim glasses, the crew cut. And I'm going, this guy is taking my uncle's identity.
That's going to be my next question. What do you think of game shows today? Because it's taken a whole different turn from when your three relatives hosted.
Well, I it's funny. I tell Adam, I watch Buzzer and I watch Game Show Channel. I do enjoy, and at the Game Show Expo, I had a chance to meet Belushi, who does, what is it, America Guests or something like that?
Oh, yeah, America Says, John Michael Higgins.
Well, not John. What's the other one that Belushi does?
Belushi does?
Get a clue.
Oh, get a clue. Oh, Rob Belushi.
Rob Belushi, right? And yes. I guess he's Jim Belushi's son and the other Belushi who passed away, his uncle.
Yes.
Or his nephew. But I had a chance to meet him, and I looked at him and I said, look, man, I am a pure white heterosexual man, but you have got the looks and the mannerism that I'm sure my father would have loved in a game show host. He has the energy. He really makes the contestants, in my opinion, you know, look good and feel comfortable. Higgins does the same thing. I saw him tape Split Second. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but Higgins has that same type of attitude. There's other hosts and other shows I like, that the hosts are a little more like comedians, so they get a little cutty with the contestants that I don't like. Now, let's talk about Match Game. The new Match Game, not a big fan. It's gotten too risque. They're, you know, openly getting drunk on air. And
do you mean the one with Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a fan. The new Name That Tune, you know, as much as I love musical shows and stuff like that, it looks like a Vegas lounge act, and I can't get into it as much as the older one. It's a different show. It's not the Name That Tune that I recall when my Uncle Jim was doing it.
Mm. And also, when you mentioned that, there was this young lady on Name That Tune that it became something.
Yes.
Steve March Torme, who was on there originally. But then this woman named Kathy Lee Johnson, who later became Kathy Lee Gifford, Regis's sidekick on Live.
Right. Who actually started out as Kathy Lee Wilson.
Oh.
And then married a guy named Johnson. And then, and then you're right, Kathy Lee Gifford and with Regis for forever. She was known as the La La Girl.
The La La Girl, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, I have one more question for you, Dave.
Sure.
Since you have had all this history of game shows, have you ever thought about becoming – or were you ever offered a game show yourself?
I did a pilot in 1977 or 1978. So again, I went to the same school. My dad, my uncle, my mother, my grandmother went to Don Martin School of Communications, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's up in LA. I went there in 1975. I got my first class radio license, and my first radio job was in 1976 in Arizona. Did that for a while. Then ended up in Tulare, which is just south of Fresno, and then back here in Orange County. I ended up here at KWIZ-FM and KZY and KYMS, and ended my radio career full-time around 82 or 83, moved out to the desert, worked at KCMJ and KPLM out there. I worked with Jeff Edwards and Al Lohman out there. And then just quit in 1993 and got back into, believe it or not, construction. I was, you know, when I graduated high school, I went right into the apprenticeship program as a carpenter. Started my first corporation with my brother and the Damiano brothers, and we started Pacifica Construction Company, and we're building custom homes in Marina Pacifica. And when the carpenters went on strike and we were signatory to the carpenters union, I went to radio school in 1975 and got into that. And there was a guy that also went to school who was going to the school to become more of a television producer. And he said, "I've got this idea for a game show, and we want to do the pilot." So I did the pilot. We actually only did it. Don Martin had kind of a studio where you can utilize it. And it was, I think it was called something like Phone Book Fortune. It kind of was trying to get off the old, remember the old TV show, Dialing for Dollars?
Oh, sure, yeah.
It was something like that. So it was more of a local thing because obviously you'd have Phone Book Fortune. You'd have a phone book. They still had phone books then in the 70s. And it has something to do with dialing somebody at their home. And if they were either watching or they knew some kind of trivia question or something like that, they'd win some money. So it was a very simple format and didn't go anywhere. And then I did work on a show with my dad, a pilot called The Dream Thing, which I don't think ever got off the ground. It took contestants that, say you were a real estate broker, but you always wanted to be a comedian. So we would take you and put you and book you in the Last Stop or something like that and get you a 5-minute spot. And you'd either be good or you'd suck at it. And then on every show, we also had a celebrity. So we had Jack LaLanne, a lot of people don't realize he was professionally trained as an opera singer. So we took him to an Italian restaurant where the servers, after they serve, you know, all sing. And we had him sing. We had Jonathan Winters wanted to be a drill instructor. So we took him, you know, down to a Marine base, and all the new recruits came off the bus, and he was all dressed up in his weird uniform and pretended to be a drill instructor. A bunch of different guys. Marty Brill, who was one of the writers for Soupy Sales, you know, he wanted to be a server at a Chinese restaurant. So we took him in Chinatown. It was really funny. And it just took people out of their comfort zone and put them into things that they thought they wanted to do. And they either, you know, were good at it or they really sucked. And that was the premise of it. So I worked with Dad on that show and Beat the Clock. So I had the opportunity to work with Dad on two shows, which I really appreciated.
There's not very many people of that era left. They're all passing away. And I think with the recent retirement or with the death of Bob Barker, I think that Pat Sajak is like the only one left from his era of that game shows that you're talking about.
Well, Peter Marshall is still around.
Yeah, Peter Marshall.
He's very old. Wink Martindale's still around. Bob Eubanks, I just saw him at the Game Show Expo. But you're right. They don't make them like they used to. One of the things that I always remember my Uncle Bill said, you never treat a contestant poorly because they are the people that are making you the money. So if there was going to be some criticism or some strange thing, he would put it on himself. And that's what I think I was getting at with some of the shows today. It's not like that anymore. Even though I like the show Idiot Test.
Oh, sure.
I like the premise of it. Looking at it, yeah. The host who I met also at the game show, Ben Gleeb.
Ben Gleeb, sure.
Nice guy, but he's a comedian and kind of, if you watch him, that's half the time it looks like he's trying to pick up on the gals that are on his show. And I said, you know, my uncle and my dad would have never done that. And again, their attitude is the show that people are watching. It's all about the show. And so you got to make it about the show. So some of the other shows, you mentioned some shows. So the ones I remember, because again, with my dad growing up, obviously Dotto, Dialing for Dollars. When we came back to California, Seven Keys. I remember I'll Bet. I remember them, you know, Beat the Clock, which, Video Village, Concentration. That was during my era when I was going to Don Martin school. So my dad lived up in LA and I lived in Seal Beach, and I would stay at his house and I would always go to the tapings, and Johnny Olson and I at least when I was there, we were very friendly towards each other. I tried to get him to crack up and he would never do it. I'd stand behind him and goose him and stuff like that. But he was one of the nicest guys ever. I mean, just a nice guy. A cousin by marriage coming from Illinois or somewhere said she was like 12 years old and just loved Johnny Olson. I said, well, we'll drive up to CBS and we'll go meet him. And so I drove her. They were visiting her and her mother and other people. We went up to CBS and they were taping Price is Right, and Johnny Olson came out in the hallways of CBS, Studio 33, 31, 43, and 44, or whatever. And there's just a big hallway in the middle, and Johnny's walking down the hall, and I said, "Hey, Johnny," he says, "Hey, Dave," I said, "this cute little girl wants to meet him." Pulls out a picture, autographs to her, talks to her for about 15 minutes. Just so delightful, and he didn't have to do that, but he did. And he was just a great guy.
As far as I know, you had Gene Wood, that was an announcer. You had Johnny Gilbert, who's still also from that time period.
Right.
And you had Johnny Jacobs and all that. And I know they were all great announcers, but Johnny Olson seems to be the king because he knew how to get an audience to act like a family before the host came out. I mean, he knew
how to be
infectious right before Bob Barker or whoever or Jackie Gleason or whatever
would come. Right.
Yeah.
And people don't realize that if they watch the old Honeymooners, that's Johnny Olson.
Yeah.
Announcing the Honeymooners.
Yeah.
You know, that's Johnny Olson.
Yeah.
You know, and Johnny Olson was like ready to retire. He was, and that's when he got Price is Right came, you know, then they did that for another, 20, gosh, how many years?
And I
was. It's funny, I have a picture autographed by Gene Wood and I mean, everybody I've worked with, you know, Johnny Olson, but Gene Wood is really funny. To Dave, my, what do you say? Your real father. It's like your legitimate father, something like that. You know, it's like, because again, nice guy. I worked with him on Family Feud, and he filled in once in a while on Now You See It. And when Johnny didn't make it, so, you know, they didn't mix up and stuff like that. Another real nice guy. Just a nice guy.
And I will. I'll end on this. When your uncle hosted The Price is Right, Tom Kennedy, he said he had some very big shoes to fill since he wasn't Bob Barker, and so I think he did a spectacular job, about as well as anybody could do, as when you're trying to be as good as Bob. But I think he did a great job with it.
A lot of people say the reason that wasn't successful was the competition on the other networks at the time, and they were trying to do anything to knock off, and I can't remember what a show it was, in Knots Landing or Dallas or something, I can't remember, but it was one of those things that, you know, try a Hail Mary, and nothing was working at the time. It was like back in the day, somebody trying to go up against, you know, the Cosby Show, and it was, you know, they say that Cosby basically brought NBC back to situation comedies in the mid-80s. If it wasn't for Cosby, NBC was, you know, flailing like crazy, and Cosby brought him out. So to get a show and be put up against Cosby back then was just, you know, 13 weeks, see you later, 13 weeks, see you later, 13 weeks, see you later. And that's what happened with my – and I think Dennis James tried it too, the nighttime version. I can't remember.
Yep.
What he was up against, but the same thing. It's just great show, great format. You know, a half hour, which I think even Bob Barker's version originally was a half hour, right? And then they turned it to an hour. It got so popular, and then, you know, they ended up doing an hour. And Bob, you know, and again, right off of Truth or Consequence, is a very audience oriented show. Bob was built for that show. Yes. I mean, even though they asked my uncle Bill to do it, apparently Uncle Bill said he wanted such a big salary. They said, "Well, we can't afford you." So he went to Bob Barker. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyways, David, I thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to get to talk to you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It was great talking about family. I'm glad that people are out there keeping this stuff alive. I love it.
I know. That's what I was going to say. I mean, at the Quiz Show Expo, that had to make your heart happy knowing that your dad, uncle, and our two uncles, I guess, are still alive and people still remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Then their minds in it. They're not still alive, but they're still alive on TV for sure.
Absolutely. And I think they always will be.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. Absolutely. I hope so.
Well, David, thank you so much, sir. God bless you.
Thank you. Take care.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.